Hey, everybody, let's all lean in together.
Show the world you support women at work and at home.
When men lean in, everyone wins.
Help women aim high.
My brother would always pick me above his friends to be on his basketball teams.
It's moments like that that you carry with you forever.
Hi, men. Are you?
Welcome back to Mass Radio Sports Talk, presented by 4.5 Athletes here on Loot Air Student Radio. If you wanted to call on the show, please do it. The number to do so is 253-535-7332. Once again, for those of you scoring at home, that is 253-535-7332. Folks, if you call into the show and repeat that number, Christian will buy you breakfast.
Mm. I don't think so. I think you have to win a bet that you put on Twitter.
Don't forget about the promotion, though. If you could tell us what that song was and who sang it, you'll get 10% off your haircut from Mackenzie Valerio at Salon 1121 in downtown Tacoma.
Right by UWT.
Absolutely. It's a great spot. Great spot. Great atmosphere. Okay, Lacey, what's up for Lacey's ladies?
All right, so last week, if you guys remember, we talked about the Seattle Storm, and I just want to give you a quick update on that. They have won their last two games since the last time we talked, and they are in the playoffs.
Whew.
So, first time in a few years, so it's exciting, and we'll keep up with them. But this week, we're going to turn our attention to UW Women's Soccer,
Woo!
Keeping it local. the Huskies have competed in the NCAA tournament in the last two seasons. They have 19 returning student athletes and are adding 9 new players to the roster this season. The Dogs have scored 11 goals and only allowed 3 goals against them in the last 7 games. So that's pretty incredible. And having said that, where do you guys think they're going to land in the Pac-12 standings right now or at the end of the season?
I did a little research because I don't want to guess and sound like an idiot. So in the preseason coaches poll, the Huskies were picked to finish 6th. Stanford is picked to win the 2016 Pac-12 crown. USC and California are picked to finish right behind them in 2nd and 3rd. It's a kind of advantage to the Fairweather State down there, California, getting all the love for the votes. Warm down there, must be nice to play soccer, you know. 6 sounds about right, I guess. I'm confident. You never know what could happen there. You got to think, if you look ahead, you look at their schedule, they could, you know, any team could have a tough run where they play, you know, the top 3 teams in the conference right in a row and back-to-back days or however the schedule works out. It all depends. You got to play the game.
Right. Yeah, you know, for me, I'm going to go with them finishing 4th, actually. I'm going to kind of go with a little bit of a bigger pull there. I really believe that there's something going on with the chemistry of UW. You know, with the football team playing extremely well, I think that sometimes can, you know, trickle down to the soccer team. I think they have a lot of new players on their roster this year. You look at the 9 freshmen they have, 9 new players, like I mentioned there. I mean, so this year can be more of one of those years where you're getting into that kind of cresting right before you really become one of those great teams. I can see them edging out Cal next year and the next couple of years to kind of crest and be in the top 3, get that 3rd spot. But for right now, I think they're going to finish 4th. I think that's okay with them, too. I think, again, when you're a team that, you know, you realize that you bring in a lot of new players, you don't have a lot of, you know, studs on the team, you're going to be okay with finishing, you know, in the middle of the pack. Obviously, yes, you want to finish 1st, but at the same time, I think they're being realistic. So I think they're going to finish 4th, guys.
Oh, 4th isn't the middle. That's near the top. That's not bad. So right now, they are tied for 3rd in the standings behind Oregon at 2nd and Stanford leading the pack with a record of 6-1. Having said that, they've only played preseason games. They're not in conference yet. UW is neck and neck with Arizona. Both teams have 5 wins, 1 tie, and 1 loss. And the Dogs seem to have handled themselves well in the preseason. They kick off their conference play on September 23rd versus Utah.
You know, Utah was picked to finish towards the bottom of the conference this season. I think if UW does what they're supposed to, they'll get off to a good start to their conference season. Somebody to look out for, Shannon Simon, is a player everyone in the conference will be forced to pay attention to, much like Eddie Nahl with the men's team. She's not a secret anymore. She's going into her junior season with 22 career points already. She led the team last year in goals, assists, and shots. So it could be one of those deals for the UW women's Husky soccer team that they need to, you know, find other people to contribute in ways that Simon has, because she's going to get locked up from other teams in the conference. They know about her now, so she's not a secret, not a surprise. It's going to take other people on the team.
All right. Well, that wraps it up for Lacey's ladies. Thanks for listening, and tune in next week to see what female athletes we are going to talk about in the Northwest Conference or Northwest area.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Great job there, Lacey. Folks, up next, we have the knockout round between Ardo and Westring. And folks, this debate, it's tough. There's two sides to it. Should Scott Westring, head coach of the PLU football team, be up in the booth as the head coach? Or is he more valuable on the sidelines? Find out who has what side next. This is Mass Radio Sports Talk presented by 4.5 Athletes on Loot Air Student Radio.
Don't go anywhere. We're back in 1 minute.
No more boys will be boys.
No more what's the big deal?
No more
it's just the way he is.
No more he just has a temper.
No more but he's such a nice guy.
No more but he has such a bright future.
No more not my problem.
No more I'll say something next time.
No more. Why didn't she tell anyone?
No more. Why doesn't she just leave?
No more. I'm sure they'll work it out.
No more. She seems fine to me.
No more. What was she wearing?
No more. She was drunk.
No more. He was drunk.
No more. She was asking for it.
No more. She never said no.
No more. Not in this family.
No more. Not on this team.
No more. We don't talk about that.
No more bystanding.
No more ignorance.
No more excuses.
No more.
Welcome back, folks. It's time to have a little debate here. Scott Westring has spent many years, I think it was 23 is the number, when he coached with his dad, Frosty. He spent that time in the box as the offensive coordinator, up in the press box, watching the game, being the eye in the sky and calling plays. When he became the head coach in 04, he moved down on the field as normal for most head coaches.
Except Saturday, for all head coaches.
Saturday, Westring moved back. Coach Westring moved back up into the press box and is going to be there for a while now, calling plays like he used to do for the majority of his career. Drew Artisone feels one way about the subject. Kellen Westring feels another way. Drew, what do you think? What do you think on the matter?
Scott is a fantastic play caller. I will never ever say that. Guy's an offensive genius. However, that's no longer his job anymore. His job is the head coach. But his also job is the offensive coordinator. But he also has another job and he's the quarterback positions coach. So he needs to delegate. He does way too much. He can't be in the box as the head coach. You can be in the box as the offensive coordinator and call plays. Matter of fact, that's where the offensive coordinator should be. But the head coach and the quarterback coach should be on the sidelines to talk to the quarterbacks. And, oh yeah, the head coach has to worry about the other half of the team. Because as we said, Coach Westring had his defense. It's not his defense. He has nothing to do with his defense. He's not even on the field to speak to his defensive players. The only people the head coach gets to talk to in the game is the coaches in the headset. That's it. That's not a head coach's job. A head coach's job is to coach everybody. That's why he's the head coach. If he wants to coach the offense, make him the offensive coordinator. I have no problems. Zero issues. It's not that I don't think he should be up there, because that's where he should be, because that's where he does what he does. But the principle of the matter is wrong. The head coach should be the head coach and be on the sidelines and coach the entire team.
So really the argument is not what he's doing, but just the idea of what he is?
Yes, the idea of what he is. I believe he should be in the box. I believe he should be in the box for what he does. I don't believe that's what the head coach's job is. I believe you need to delegate.
All right.
If you're unable to delegate, that's a you problem.
Kellen, go ahead.
To start off, I want to just say, Drew, I appreciate everything you just said. Mm-hmm. It was well said, well conducted, good tone. In the NFL, Division I, Division I AA, Division II, the head football coach should be on the field. They are hiring you as the head coach. They are not paying you to be an OC. They are paying you millions of dollars to be the head coach. Normally, once you're hired as a head coach, you now need to hire someone that you feel comfortable enough to call plays. When my dad was hired here as a head coach 13 years ago, to focus more on being the head coach and the head coaching duties, he recruited one coach in particular that was going to be the offensive coordinator here at PLU, with my dad still having 51% of the say when it came to play calls. His name was Mike Fanger, who was the head coach at Lewis and Clark at the time. It ended up not working out because his wife had a great real estate job in Portland, so he ended up staying down there. So my dad has looked to bring in an OC where he could be more of a figurehead head coach. In Division III, you are paid to coach the team however you darn well please. It's a totally different world compared to Division I. It takes my dad 2 minutes to get from the booth down to the sidelines if he wanted to. In Division I, it would take about 10 to 15 minutes to get down to the sidelines with all the foot traffic as well as elevators, and it would be a mess. Being up in the booth as a head coach, in my opinion, again, humble opinion, only works in Division III. Every head coach that has been at Linfield that also has called plays has been up in the booth, including the great Ad Rushman, Jay Losey, who helps coach at Oregon State, and their current head coach, Joe Smith. Now, let me just go over the Linfield resume real quick for you folks scoring at home. They have 49 conference titles, 49 first-team All-Americans, and 60 consecutive winning seasons. So in my opinion, it works out pretty well. Now, my dad coached with my grandpa for 23 years when he was the OC up in the box, and they never had a losing season, and they went to eight national championships. Thanks, Christian. My dad is a feel kind of coach. He's not a paint-by-the-numbers kind of coach. He coaches with instinct. He has play scripted 5 plays ahead because he can see their coverages and he can see their tendencies. And again, you look at the Kalu game. We ran 58 lead sweep wide. DJ, I'm so glad you're here. We ran 58 lead sweep wide pass to DJ for the touchdown. Why did it work? It worked because my dad, on 58 lead sweep wide pass touchdown the quarter before, only watched their safety. He scored on double flag and over. DJ should have scored it on 58 lead pass wide. But he saw that the safety came downhill, and that's why that play would have worked. On the field, he can't see that. Not quite done, sorry. On the field, he can't quite see that. Also, with all the chaos on the sideline, trying to call plays, trying to get opinions from every offensive coach, it's a mess. Being up in the box, he doesn't have that problem. What's kept him from going up in the box in the past, while he's been the head coach, is he's never felt the staff was mature enough without him on the sidelines. It's hard to give that up. Now, there are 3 former head coaches on the sidelines now. Judd Keim, Trevor Roberts, and Jim Sutrick. And so the maturity is there this year for him to go up in the box where they can handle the sidelines. My dad had to ask himself this really hard question. What's the best role for him on game day? Is it being the figurative head coach on the sidelines? Is it being the head coach and the OC on the field? Or is it being up in the booth where he can still be the head coach, but he can also be the OC and have the best seat in the house to call plays? The coaching staff here, I promise you, was begging him to go up in the box because they knew that his genius would be best used up there. In the Kalu game, we had 1 timeout left in the first half and 2 timeouts left in the second half. And Drew, I know you appreciate that one.
Yep.
That's never happened at PLU.
Ever.
It's because there's no chaos getting plays in. The last couple of years, we would snap it with like 6 seconds on the clock. Now we get to the line, John or Cole, we have 20 seconds to either check or call a different play, whatever we want to do. That's a big difference, and that's what makes us more successful. To quote my dad, being up in the booth is a step away from heaven. It's a step below heaven. When you're the son of Frosty Westry and the 9th winningest football coach in college football history, when you're one of the best public speakers anyone has ever heard of, when you know how to get parents to be bought in and how to comfort your players, when you've had numerous Division I offensive coordinator job offers, when you're coaching in Division III when it's more low-key, you have the right to be the head coach and the OC up in the booth. Heck, you could coach and call the game from Parkland Putters for all I care. You deserve that role. Mic drop.
I'm really glad you come out with all of these stats and whatever, and it's from an offensive player's point of view. Matter of fact, we have 2 offensive players sitting here. Mm-hmm. Here's my question. As a defensive player, how do I even know if Scott knows my name?
No, come on now.
No, time out. Here's my question. If you're a defensive player and you're being recruited to PLU, you're being recruited by the head coach, correct? That's who comes and recruits you, right? That's usually how recruiting is done.
There's 3 coaches that normally go out to high schools.
They go out to high schools to be recruited.
Right. But let's say my dad goes to a school.
You're a defensive player.
Okay.
How in the world would you say yes to a coach who's not even going to have any control over anything you do? That is my question.
Now, hold on. Earlier, didn't you bring up delegation with Scott Westring, Drew?
Yeah.
Well, doesn't he do that then by allowing his defensive coordinator to have complete control over his defense? That's delegation.
That's delegation on one side of the ball. That's never the side of the ball that he's had a problem delegating with. That's what I'm saying. You're gonna give up your defense. That's fine, but that's not the point as a head coach. The head coach is to be able to coach both sides of the ball.
So my thing is, Drew,
of the ball. So if you're an offensive player, I understand. You'd be like, yeah, this is the best decision for Scott. The defense may not feel that way because the defense may now feel out of touch with their head coach because, in principle, the head coach is the coach of both sides of the ball. Football is a 3-pronged game. Offense, defense, special teams, not just offense. If it was just offense, the Ravens wouldn't have a Super Bowl. Sorry, that's just the case.
Okay, let's get DJ Winters here with us. He's a tight end for POU. DJ, what do you think about it?
I mean, I see both sides of the story, and yes, I agree with Drew to a certain aspect, and yes, I agree with Kellen with a certain aspect. Speaking as an offensive perspective, I completely agree with Scott being up in the booth. Like Kellen said, Linfield's coach does it, and just like for an offensive, like we are just so much more calmer on the sidelines with Scott being up in the booth. We aren't rushing around having to use timeouts all over the place. We get plays in way smoother, and just like as an offense, we run more smoothly. Now, from Drew's perspective, as a defensive player, I don't know how they would feel. I could see where you're coming from, though, from that point of view, because like maybe sometimes, yeah, they do feel left out a bit. But I think when we come together as a team and Scott talks to the whole team, I think they feel more than welcomed and feel like they're understood.
So, Kellen, jump in here. Yeah. We got to wrap this up here in a couple minutes, but yeah, go ahead.
No problem there. I think the defense, you know, if you were to interview anybody, and again, this is me spitballing, I don't think they give a rip where he is. As long as we're winning, as long as we're producing. Drew, to your point about the whole recruiting aspect, when I was in high school, when I was being recruited by Oregon State, Eastern, Portland State, and Central, not one time did the receiver coach or any offensive coach come talk to me. It was all defensive coaches. The guys that offered me the scholarships, Division One, Double A.
That's your point. Division One coaching is different. Division One coaching is different. That's your point. That's not how it's done. At Division One, there are people who are in charge of recruiting, and that is all they do. And you know that,
right?
So
right.
That's different. At Division Three, especially at this school where you only have 6 coaches in a football program, which is flipping unheard of,
right,
for football. Yeah, there's going to be some cross-pollination. Everyone has to recruit.
And that's what I'm saying.
But at the Division I programs, they have recruiting coordinators. Right. They have guys, that's their job.
But that's kind of what my point is, Drew. I think Division III, you're able to do it just because of how – and it's not a diss to us, DJ, but Division III football is a little bit more low-key. It's just different. The budget's different. How many people come to the games is different. It's still great football, don't get me wrong. It's the best players in high school that aren't physically freaks like Jenkins, Austin Safarian Jenkins, Casey Williams, guys like that. But here's the thing. As a Division III coach, you can do whatever you want. Laurie Turner, my dad went – out of his respect, went and said, hey, how do you feel about me going to the box? And you know what Laurie said? Bless her heart. She said, Scott, whatever's going to get you to win games – do what you want, and that's what we're doing here.
I think that's fantastic. I think it's great that you want to know. I think it helps that Scott's in the box. I completely agree with that. I think that's where he should be. However, the principle of it is wrong.
Well,
it is wrong, and that's just the case.
We got to wrap this up here. My feelings are that at the end of the day, the head coach's decision is to do what's best for the team, the entire team, and I think that what is best is what has proven, Kellen said, when Scott was in the booth with his dad, Frosty, they didn't have a losing season. Proven, it's going to work. Stick with it. All right, we're going to take a short break here. This is Mass Radio Sports Talk presented by 3.5 Athletes. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Mariners. Oh, man.
Oh, man.
Can't wait.
Here we go.
My hair is kind of different.
Not everyone likes the way I dress. And I don't look like other people.
Me neither. Everyone is different, but no one deserves to be bullied. So be kind, stay positive, and support each other.
Every single day.
Together we can change the game!
Welcome back to Mass Radio Sports Talk, presented by 4.5 Athletes here on Loop Air Student Radio, a special edition of our Thursday show. Folks, if you want to call into the show, please do it. The number to do so is 253-535-7332. Once again, that is 253-535-7332.
So it's time for a confession. Okay. Last week, I committed a most egregious sin. I told everyone that the Mariners were done. To my credit, the M's were 4-6 in their last 10, and they were 4.5 games out of a second wild card spot, even a chance to be in the postseason. Since that time, and even a day before, the Mariners have not lost. They haven't lost, okay? They're on an eight-game winning streak. They are 1.5 games outside of the second wild card, so they're 1.5 games away from being in that one-game playoff. 16 games left in the season. It's been so much fun to follow. It's been frustrating. It's been, like I said, a week ago, I wrote them off. They're 4.5 games out, not enough time left. It's over. But now we're sitting here with, 16 games left saying, hey, they got a chance. Kellen, what's worked for them?
Well, I like to kind of compare their marriage. They're kind of like that ex-girlfriend that just kind of plays with your heart, texts you once in a while, and you get your hopes up. You just don't quite know if she's serious or not. And that's what the Mariners have honestly been all season. They're serious. They're not serious. And so, again, Christian, I kind of feel your pain there. But again, 8-game winning streak, very, very exciting. So for me, fellas, and Lacey, no matter the sport, every team needs a leader.
Mm-hmm.
Robinson Cano is my leader for the Mariners. He's hitting .298 this season with 33 home runs and 87 RBIs. And this is something that might, possibly a lot of fans might not quite know. He got double hernia surgery in the offseason. Now, this is what's crazy. In my opinion, this is what depicts the leader. He knew he was going to have this surgery before the season was over, but he played in the final three games of the 2015 season before having the surgery. When asked by ESPN.com, why doesn't he just take the final three games off? This is what Robinson Cano said, who's being paid millions of dollars. And you should say, well, Cano, play for the money, but this is why Cano played. He said, I love to play baseball. I played like this for the last 2 months. I love this game so much. I love to be out there. For me, guys, that's what leadership is. It's playing the game you love. It's playing when you're hurt. I played with a torn ACL before. You got to play the game you love, and then you earn other people's respect. Yeah, at least he was impressive.
That is impressive.
You could tell now. You could tell after having that surgery, he's healthy again. Last year, he had a down year. People, what's wrong with him? What's wrong with him? Through the whole first half. And it kind of came out over the All-Star break.
And not many people knew
half.
About the injury.
They didn't. For the whole first half of the year, people were like, why is he so bad right now?
Right.
He's playing with a double sports hernia. Yeah. Like, that's ridiculous. And he played the whole
that
second
hurts.
Half and got better and got better and got better. And now he's back to being healthy. Career high in home runs, like you said, 33 home runs. So, I mean, it's working right now for the Mariners. Robinson Cano, it kind of goes through him. Lacey, who's standing out?
I think to go along with Robinson Cano, we got to consider Kyle Seager, kind of flying under the radar for the past few years. He started with the M's in 2011, didn't get major minutes until 2012. And Seager's career stats, if you look at them, it is amazing, his improvement. In almost every category, Seager has increased in numbers. And to just give a few examples, for runs, Seager went from 62 runs in 2012 to 83 in 2016, which is this season, which you have to consider is not yet over. His batting average jumps from .259 in 2012 to .288 this season. And as a third baseman on the defensive end, he has 96 putouts this season and 337 assists. He's a key component to the success of the Mariners, both offensively and defensively.
That's exactly right. It's fun to look at the numbers and watch him just get better and better and better, throughout his entire career. It's been great to watch, and he's been super helpful for the Mariners all year long. Drew, what's been working for him? What do you think?
Hayashi Iwakuma. I know we talked about him a little bit.
Oh my, that was terrible. What's his first name?
Hisashi.
That was better.
Hisashi Iwakuma, right?
There you
something
go.
Like on those lines.
call him Kuma and don't hurt yourself. Kuma?
Ichiro Suzuki.
Can I call him Kuma? Can I call him Kuma? All right. Okay. 10-5 in the last 15 games. 3.26 ERA. 60 strikeouts. The guy's dealing. I mean, he's been the bright spot in the Mariners rotation all year long.
With Felix having a down year, he's been
he's been the bright spot in the rotation. I look to see him throw very, very well in the coming weeks. And hopefully, very hopefully, Mariners can make the playoffs and we can see him throw a little bit more.
Right.
Right. I mean,
That'd make Christian happy. And when the producer's happy, we're happy.
It would make the whole Northwest happy. It's been way too long since the Mariners have been in the playoffs. We talked about how injured they were last week. They've just been hurt all the time. I think they've used a number of about 15 starting pitchers throughout the season. 5 is your rotation number. You use 5 pitchers every fifth day. They have had to use 15. Wow. It's kind of ridiculous. It's kind of remarkable that they're still in the hunt with 16 games left. As of right now, the M's are chasing the Detroit Tigers, the Toronto Blue Jays, and the Baltimore Orioles. The Mariners will be at home. They got a day off today, but they'll be at home for 2 sets of 3 games. The first 3 will be against the Astros, and then the second set of 3 games is going to be against those Blue Jays. So there's a great chance for the, you know, if the Mariners win the series or sweep the Blue Jays, they can pass the Blue Jays in the standings, and then it'll be, you know, they need a little help. They need the Tigers to lose. They need the Orioles to lose. They need help to get there. You know, with this six-game homestand, it could be, you know, as important as any homestand has been all year long. What's a reasonable expectation for the M's this upcoming homestand? You know, should we really expect them to win all six games? Should we, you know, should they split them? Should they go half, you know, 3-3? You know, what are you looking for? What's going to be a successful homestand for the M's?
Well, I don't think we need to worry about the Baltimore Orioles. I mean, I think they don't have Cal Ripken anymore. They don't have Miguel Tejada.
Is that where your baseball knowledge goes back
it
to? Stops
it stops way back.
It Cal stops Ripken Jr. and Miguel back. Tejada?
It stops at 2001.
Those are some great names, though. I hope I just got some respect.
We need next year you're going to tell me David Justice still plays for the Yankees.
He always had that great necklace. But here's the thing, guys. I think right now, again, a lot of momentum going on with the Mariners side, and it's exciting with the fans. Twitter's kind of going crazy. The first couple fans, I think, get some, you know, free when they walk in the stadium. So right now, there's some energy right now that hasn't been there. So for me, I think we're going to go 4-2. I think that's realistic. Of course, do I want to say 6-0? Absolutely. But again, with the Mariners, again, I paint them back to being that ex-girlfriend. I just don't quite trust them yet. Can't quite give them the Facebook official. So I'm going to go 4-2. Again, Soto Mojo is real right now, though. I'm really, really excited to see where they are at. And again, I think if we're in a one-game playoff, guys, you got to put Felix on the mound.
That's an interesting. We can argue that in a minute. 4-2. That's winning both series. I think, you know, I think that would work. I'd be happy with that. Lacey, what do you think?
I'm gonna have faith and say 6-0. We're gonna.
Whoa! Hey Moses. Now! Hey
wow.
Now!
What's in that water bottle?
That's four. If they were to do it, I'm all for it.
That's 14 in a row.
Straight.
What is this, Moneyball?
That's ridiculous.
They don't write movies. They write movies about yeah. that stuff. Next, you're going to tell me the Angels are in the outfield.
You know,
that's better than Moneyball and rookie.
The Angels in the outfield, rookie of the year is on the mound.
No,
and they're going to run off 14 straight.
I'm buying in. I'm with Lacey. 14 straight.
That's dude, wow. You wrote them off last week. You can't say that. You said the season was over.
You're the ex-girlfriend that goes
home.
Oh, man.
You told us to stop
man,
watching.
I'm bought in now. Drew, what are they going to do?
3-3.
Oh,
the Blue Jays are too good, man. Even with Josh Donaldson, hip's not lying. I know he's out with a hip injury, but they're just too good, man. The Blue Jays are too good, and they're too streaky come pennant races. And come to the end of the year, they play their best baseball at the end of the year. They always have.
The Mariners are at Safeco, though.
That's a huge part of it. They're not traveling to Toronto.
But in my
Toronto's
opinion,
coming here.
They almost travel better than they play at home.
You have
year.
To look at the splits. Yeah. You'd have to early in the season. It was like that. They were playing way better on the road, and then it kind of flip flopped. I think it evened out. You'd have to look at the splits. I don't know if you could. I know not to overlook the Astros, but they lost Jose Altuve last night with an injury.
Yeah,
there goes their best player. The Blue Jays are out Josh Donaldson. That's their best player without question. Right?
Who's, but it's baseball, man.
Oh my goodness!
It's
you
baseball.
Know where the Mariners.
That's the only reason the Mariners are even in the wild card race because it's baseball.
That's the best explanation you got.
You
it's
wrote
baseball.
Them off.
I did. I was yeah. That's not my finest hour, but
you've been great with the music today, though. You've been great with the music today.
And
thanks,
the
man.
Breakfast.
Oh,
too.
I don't have one ready. Anyway, yeah, like
cool.
Like I just everyone's excited about it. There's you, know, Kellen. You know how much it would cost you to get into a Mariners game Friday night?
Is it $8.50?
It's about $8.
$8
to celebrate the 8-game winning streak.
That's four too many. College budget.
Four too many. If I'm not working at the News Tribune, I'm at Safeco Field. I hope people are going out to that game. I hope they're going all weekend long with the Seahawks not being home. And we'll talk about them next. They're in L.A.
I see PLU's away. A lot of people
PLU's
are traveling
away.
For that game.
Go to the Mariners. Go cheer them
absolutely.
On. Put energy in the ballpark. Do them some justice here.
Don't do David justice. But, folks, we are going to take a short break. When we come back, our special segment, The Seahawks will be underway. Find out what we think will happen to the Seahawks coming up next. This is Mass Radio Sports Talk presented by 4.5 Athletes here on Loot Air Student Radio.
Emergency. I'd like a pizza for delivery.
Ma'am, you've reached 911. This is an emergency line.
Large with half pepperoni, half mushroom.
Do you have an emergency or not?
Yes.
And you're unable to talk because...
Right.
Ma'am, is there someone in the room with you?
Yes.
Okay, I've sent an officer. Can you stay on the phone with me?
No. See you soon. Thank you.
Holy smokes, folks. Welcome back to Mass Radio Sports Talk, presented by 4.5 Athletes here on Loot Air Student Radio. If you wanted to call into the show, please do it. The number to do so is 253-535-7332. Once again, that is 253-535-7332.
It's time for everyone's favorite prediction game.
Da-da-da!
On Sunday, the Seahawks will. Now, you gotta kind of look at this from an objective viewpoint. I mean, last week, all you Seahawks fans came in here. Seahawks are going to blow out the Dolphins. They squeaked one out.
Yeah.
Okay. So, what do you got for us, Lacey? What's up?
I will say I was sweating a little bit on Sunday. That's a little right. nervous. I had to text Christian during the game and say, what is going on?
That's right.
But we were able to squeak that one out. So, that one's behind us. Got the win. Seahawks, I believe, will win this weekend. Coming into Sunday with the Rams, we have to consider Wilson's ankle injury. He started practice on Wednesday, which was yesterday, and is expected to play in this week's matchup. But will he be that mobile threat that he is? Very good at being able to scramble away from defense and create offense, even with Wilson's injury. I think he will be able to find holes in the Rams' defense, and I think they'll be fine there. As far as the other end of the ball, the Rams' offense, or lack thereof, did Ooh. Not come to play on Sunday against the 49ers.
Way too soon.
Case Keenum, Rams QB, threw two interceptions, and the Rams were not able to put any points on the board. I think the Seahawks have better defense than the 49ers, and the Rams are going to struggle.
Your score prediction?
I don't have one. Give me a second to think.
Just vomit one out real quick.
I don't think the Rams are going to score. So
again.
It's going to be a shutout.
So however many, so it does not matter
however many the Seahawks score.
So it's only going to take a field goal. It's only going to take a field goal or a safety. That's about it.
Yeah. That's all it takes. All
right, Drew, what do you got for us?
So I just, first, before we get into it, I just feel like Ndamukong Suh has a really bad habit of stepping on things.
That one was way more incidental than anyone in the past.
But again, his track record.
He's got a really bad habit of stepping
on things. My brother was doing that the whole game. Oh, Ndamukong Suh stepped on his ankle.
I love Jonah.
Come on, that was fair play. It happened.
All right. It's just a bad habit. Go by association. The Seahawks will win without any doubt in my mind. The Rams were horrendous. Absolutely horrendous. They are the epitome of what the NFL has turned into, and that's a bubble screen league. This is what made them so unsuccessful against the Niners. Case Keenum and the Rams refused to throw the ball down the field, and that's what you have to do to win games. I mean, bubble screen to Tavon Austin only works so many times. After the second time, it's a four-yard loss every single time, and you refuse to alter your game plan when the Niners are sitting in cover two in man-free. Throw a quick slant or a cover two fade. Would it kill you? I mean, good Lord. You're just getting blown up by your wideouts are getting blown up behind the line of scrimmage. I mean, that's why the Hawks beat the Fins last week too, because, you know, Russell Wilson will throw the ball down the field. He's not scared to. Pete is not scared to launch the ball down the field. It's very obvious. And also, despite the buttoned up look that, you know, the Rams displayed in Hard Knocks, their best defensive player and defensive leaner, the nose tackle, Donald, his meltdown and two-year-old temper tantrum while getting blown out by the subpar 49ers shows that they are very much the opposite. Pete runs a tight ship. Doug Baldwin and Russ seem to have picked up right where they left off last year. I think the Hawks are just going to absolutely roll the Rams.
So there's the Madden curse. Is there like a Hard Knocks curse as well? I'm not quite sure.
You have to look at the history.
No, they look.
I don't know.
They look so buttoned up on Hard Knocks. Like Jeff Fisher was running this tight ship. You're going to do this during the national anthem. I don't do this. And then your best defensive player and leader throws a two-year-old temper tantrum in the middle of the field. I mean, what's this, kindergarten? We're going to send him to the corner to sit and think about it? Good Lord.
Jeff Fisher, in my opinion, should be on the hot seat, though. Let's be honest. He hasn't had the best record.
Hey, let's go 8-8. Just 5 years in a row now.
Right.
5 years.
But he kind of gets a pass.
All right,
but,
Kellen, what do you think?
So I'm going to go with the Seahawks will win. But again, folks, we've got to focus on the Rams are going to come into this game with a lot of energy playing in front of 90,000 screaming fans with this being their first game at the Coliseum. It's very, very exciting for the new look LA Rams, not the St. Louis Rams. Obviously, I think the Seahawks are going to limit Russell Wilson's design runs big time. You talk about his injury coming off the ankle. Again, anytime you come off an ankle, it takes a couple weeks to get that ankle loose again, be elusive where Russell was before. Lord willing, Sierra has been giving him deep tissue massages and able to get that ankle ready to go, which, no question, could be in the Rams' favor, knowing that Russell's not quite mobile as he normally is. But again, we look at last year, Russell showed that he can stand in the pocket and sling that ball to any target he wants to, whether it's Curse, whether it's Baldwin. Lord willing, Jimmy Graham can kind of get his act together for the Seahawks. Again, you look at last week, the Dolphins had a great defensive line. In my opinion, the Rams have even a better defensive line, so it's going to be a great challenge for up front the Hawks. And again, it's interesting looking at how the Hawks kind of delegate their money. They don't put a lot of money into the offensive line, in my opinion, and I take this from Coward, but I absolutely give him 100% credit. You got to build from the inside in. The Hawks like to kind of build from the outside in when it comes to the skill players. So I think the matchup is going to be very, very interesting up front. I do think it's going to be a low-scoring game because, you know, the Rams have a great defense. But again, I think the Hawks are going to put a little bit of points up on the board. So I'm going to go with Seahawks 24 and Rams finally putting some points up on the board during the 2016-2017 season. So Seahawks 24, Rams 10.
That's what I was going to say 17-6, but that's a pretty good spread.
Yeah. What about you, Deej?
By the way, those new Seahawk unis are very fresh.
Unless you're colorblind.
Yeah. just real quick here, no matter how bad the Rams are, they always have the Seahawks number. I was looking at a stat on SportsCenter.
Great point.
And I think the last 2 years, I want to say, the Rams are 3-1 against the Seahawks. And so I'm not going to go away from the stats. The Rams are going to do good in this one, but I think the Seahawks squeak it out 17-14.
Wow. Ooh,
Kalu score.
You know, wow. I'm going to agree with DJ. I think the Seahawks will win. But like DJ says, it's not going to be as big of a blowout as people are thinking. It will be. The Seahawks gave up roughly 3 sacks a game in 2015. That's not even taken into consideration the hurries, the rushes, the touches on the quarterback. After week one, there's really no evidence to say that offensive line is better, is there? I mean, the Dolphins chewed them up. You saw Justin Britt get rolled over by Ndamukong Suh several times. The Rams are stacked along the defensive line. They had 41 sacks last season. We've talked about the Russell Wilson injury. That's going to play a factor whether people want to, you know, believe it or not. He's not going to be as mobile as he was. And if the Rams' defensive line is chewing up the Seahawks' offensive line, which they have done before, it's going to be another tough ball game for the Seahawks, even though, you know, Monday Night Football for the Rams and everyone got to watch them get pooped on. But really, it's going to be close. Score-wise, that's... I like DJ's score. I don't know if it's even going to be that high scoring because, you know, the Seahawks didn't show that they could run the ball against a good defensive line. 13-6, maybe? Yeah, something down low like that. I mean, it's not, you know, the Seahawks, something's got to get going.
And, Kellen, to your point about the first game in the new Coliseum, last time I checked, the first kickoff in the new Coliseum didn't go over too well.
Is that a preseason? What happened?
It was taken back for a touchdown. The first kickoff in Coliseum, in the reopen of the Coliseum, the Dallas Cowboys took back for a touchdown.
Side note, did you see that the Rams are charging like $100 for parking?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's ridiculous. Okay, back to football. So, obviously, last week was our first time to see Seahawks in the arena facing live bullets. I'll use some Westering terms.
In the arena with some live bullets.
Quote the poem.
Real blood.
Who were a couple players who impressed you from the Seahawks last week? Kellen, who got your attention?
Yeah, I really thought Cassius Marsh did a great job in this football game. Again, he's a guy that's just, you know, he's not going to get his name in the paper for the most part. He's kind of under the radar, but he had 4 total tackles, including one heck of a sack there in the fourth quarter. It was so cool how they showed an angle for the instant replay. He was full spread eagle right over Tannehill. It was awesome. A great play by that sucker. He got after it there. He also had a huge hit on special teams. And again, in my opinion, you look at the Seahawks, I have never seen more players play on special teams, and that just translate to them being on the field more when it comes to offense and defense. And I watched a post-game interview with Curse and Marsh, and they said it all starts with special teams because a lot of these guys were undrafted. They get drafted. They finally get on the Seahawks squad. They start the special teams. They prove themselves. Then they play offense and defense. But they love special teams because that was their first love when they came in the NFL, and they stay on these special teams. So it's so fun to see all these guys that are scoring, that are making these great sacks on special teams. And again, special teams can have big-time impacts in the football game, and you saw that on Sunday.
Drew, who impressed you?
Dougie B, my boy Doug Baldwin, had a great game. 9 catches, 92 yards, 10.2 yards a catch, and a touchdown. mean, that's solid. That's Doug Baldwin's stat line. That's what you're going to see for him probably every single week.
And he finally got paid, which is
great.
And
he finally got paid. Pay the man, as LeBron James said. Just pay the man. Get a deal done. Let's play football. We need him.
Yep. All right, let's flip it now. Who left a little to be desired from the Seahawks last week? Who are you looking to see? Who should have had more? Who do you need to see have more?
Yeah, this is a tough question, and I hate to say his name. I'm going to go with Thomas Rawls. He only had 13 carries for 32 yards, so an average of like 3.1 per carry. I know he's coming off an injury. Obviously, I know what that's like, but in my opinion, I think he's better than that. I think he needs to do a better job when he's getting the football. And again, it's a lot of moving parts. It's the offensive line as well. It's also Russell Wilson, again, with that ankle injury, whether the handoffs aren't quite getting there on time or whatever the case may be. Football, especially in the NFL, is a game of inches, and it goes so fast. But for them to get going against the Rams' defensive line, I think Thomas Rawls needs to play better.
Drew, who do you need to see more out of?
Instead of a player, I'm going to take a unit. I'm going to take the Seahawks O-line.
That's fair.
The Seahawks O-line left a lot to be desired. You know, they say leave it all on the field, as to use another Scott coaching colloquialism, little cliche. They left nothing on the field. Matter of fact, they might as well have not even showed up. Russell Wilson ran for his life per usual. I think that's what makes Russell Wilson really dangerous, though, sometimes, is his subpar O-line. But at the end of the day, you got to be able to run block. If you can't get engaged and get any push, just go home. Russell Wilson will move the ball on his own. He's done it now for 2 years, move the ball on his own right. So if the Seahawks want a balanced attack and want to start winning games big instead of just barely squeaking them out, the O-line's got to get some sort of push.
You got to think about the matchup, though. It's the same matchup this week, even though they're missing that nose tackle. They're going
to
face
But that's what we want to just see improvement, and that's what everyone wants to see, is just the fact that they can play against a great D-line. In the playoffs, Lord willing, we get there, every team has a great D-line. So, again, if this NFL was a 7-on-7 league, the Seahawks would be great.
Absolutely.
But the fact that their O-line is probably their weakest aspect on the football team, it makes it extremely tough.
That's absolutely right. Good stuff. Good stuff, guys.
So, folks, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we will take a look at a local college sports team for our last segment. Find out what that sport team is next. This is Mass Radio Sports Talk, presented by 4.5 Athletes on Loot Air Student Radio.
Gentle Lavender, center for the Los Angeles Sparks, here with the ladies of the Old School Crew Supreme Dance Team. Our wish is for a world with less cancer and more birthdays. Join us and the American Cancer Society team, because we believe every birthday you celebrate is a victory.
Happy birthday!
Welcome back to Mass Radio Sports Talk, presented by 4.5 Athletes here on Loot Era Student Radio. Again, folks, for our last segment, we only have a few minutes, but if you want to call on the show, please do it. The number to do so is 253-535-7332. Once again, that is 253-535-7332.
Let's jump right in at UW football. Still all the hype in the world. I think they're still eighth in the top 25 coaches poll, or the AP poll. Lacey, what's impressive about them right now?
The Huskies performed at a fast pace, shifting to a no-huddle offense in the second quarter this weekend against Idaho. It was a great move by offensive coordinator and QB coach Jonathan Smith. Jake Browning's second quarter stats reflect that awesome move. 17 for 19 passing for 215 yards and 3 touchdowns just in the second quarter. That is something the Dogs are excited about this season, the ability to play at a fast pace if they have to. It's something that Browning is comfortable with because it is the style of play he was running in high school, setting a national record of 229 touchdown passes in just 3 years in his high school career. And I think this is a great advantage for the Dogs to keep their defense opponents on their toes.
To continue the Jake Browning love fest over here, his completion percentage is 74.5%. He's thrown for 581 yards and 8 touchdowns.
That's it?
Weak effort.
In 2 games, he's back. The spread no huddle is where he feels at home. That's where he's just going to absolutely tear defenses apart. I mean, Washington, I'm not trying to read too much into him. It's a lot of hype, but they have a cupcake schedule to start the year. We'll see how that's going to play out once they have to face bigger and better opponents. So we'll see, but I think Jake Browning's the key.
These quotes coming up here, in my opinion, depict the UW defense extremely well. Azeem Victor said Washington's defense players want to be tone setters, and the best way for the linebacker and his Washington teammates to do that is to make plays on special teams. You can kind of relate that back to the Seahawks. On the opening kickoff in the Huskies' 59-14 win over Idaho on Saturday at Husky Stadium, the junior safety made a beeline for the ball carrier, forcing a fumble that set up the game's first touchdown. Baker says, I saw a lane, and so I shot and I hit him. I didn't even know the ball fell out until I got up and everyone was jumping around. It was a great feeling. We always preach about making a play. We made a play. Now, not only did Baker force that initial fumble, but he tied Victor for the team lead in tackles with six tackles each game when their days were finished nearly a little bit earlier there. So for this quote here, being a defensive player, we love to make a statement early. Making a big hit like that makes the receiver scared. And believe me, I know as a receiver, when you do get hit over the middle, you are a little bit scared. You kind of get those T-Rex arms, can't quite fully extend there. So maybe the next guy doesn't want to catch that ball next time, Baker says. We love hitting, having big-time early hits like that, but at the end of the day, we're trying to get that W. So again, a lot of stuff about Jake Browning, which is great when it comes to UW football, but clearly, guys, these defensive guys, like PLU football, are flying around with their heads cut off.
What's more important for the Huskies to be dominant on? Is it more important for them to put up points and for them to match, you know, say they play Oregon later in the year, and I don't know where Oregon's offense is right now, but, you know, say that the end of the score is 62-58 or something like that. Is it more important to have that crazy good offense, or is it important to have that defense to stop
the Pac-12? The Pac-12 has become consistently bad in terms of defense. It's a very high-scoring conference with Oregon, Stanford, now UW. They're going to sit in the spread, no huddle, and throw the snot out of the ball, air raid offense, and see what's going to happen. The defense, if UW's defense can lock up and be this dominant against Pac-12 teams, everyone's in trouble because no one else can defend.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that, Drew. I think when you're playing Christian McCaffrey against Stanford, you're not going to stop him. I'm sorry. He's that good.
Him.
So you can contain him. But at the end of the day, when you're playing against the Stanford, you know, the Stanford Cardinals, you want to score more points. And so that's to answer your question, Christian, I would absolutely say offense is a little bit more important when it comes to the Huskies being more successful.
On first name alone, Christian McCaffrey is probably going to win the Heisman.
Hey, Shish Nation.
Shish Nation. On first name alone, Shish McCaffrey. All right, Christian.
All right, folks, so we're just about done here with Mass Radio Sports Talk presented by 4.5 Athletes. We want to thank our special guest, DJ Winter, for coming in the studio on a busy day. I know he's got class here at 11:50. We'll be in the ice bath in about 10 minutes. But, folks, thank you so much for listening. I feel like our show was great today, guys. Awesome job, everybody, doing their research. It's been so much fun. I am Kellen Scott Westring.
I am Lacey Nicholson.
I'm Gerard Asoni.
And I'm Christian Bond. Tune in to the show next week from 9 to 11. Tune in to Laser today at 4 to hear the new Arts and Culture show by Taryn Warden. Matthew Salzano is going to be in studio. He's going to be helping her out. They'll have fun, interesting stories about what's going on in pop culture and other places. So tune into that later today. So that's it for us. We're out of here. See you.